Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Film Detectives. Yeah, my name is Trevor, and that's Elliot, and we're going to cover some films today. Imagine if like every intro I just did like a different character.
You should totally do that, because why not? We're in the film business, you know, we're a bunch of characters here, you know?
It's true, and you know who likes characters, Elliot?
Who would that be?
Kids.
Kids do. They literally have the most crazy imaginations too, you know?
And you know what's so fitting about that, Elliot?
We're talking about kids' films today.
Yeah, but dark kids' films. And yeah. No, it's not Boy in the Striped Pajamas. It's not that one, because that one is very sad.
Yes. These are sadder.
True.
Yes.
And they also deal with war.
Yes, which,
yay,
we all want to talk about war right now, you know, because of what's going on in the world.
Yeah, and I mean, literally Belfast, which I'm spoiling one of the films, but I mean, both of these films are literally what some people are going through right now. Like, kids are going through this right now.
Exactly.
We're seeing it live.
Yeah, we're seeing it live and uncensored, and it's pretty sad right now. I mean, like, we're on the brink of going too far to the point where it could really get bad, type of thing. So Let's hope it doesn't go that far. But to get back to films and these particular two films that we are talking about today, which are Belfast, directed by Kenneth Branagh, came out this past year and is now up for several Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture. And Ivan's Childhood, directed by Andrei Tarkovsky. It came out in 1962. It's a Russian film about a child who literally is scarred by war. He loses his whole family. We come to find out as we follow him, particularly Ivan, through his journey through the film. And he meets all these Russian soldiers on the front lines with they're basically at war with Nazi Germany. That's during World War II. They're fighting Germans on the front lines. It's not really specified where they are specifically, whether it's on the border of Germany and Russia or in Germany itself, because it kind of seems like it's when Russia started to push into Germany and was taking back. Certain military strongholds that the Nazis had at that time, and were pushing them back to Berlin and such. Or it could have been the other way around. It's not very clear, but that's pretty much the premise of Ivan's Childhood. And through it, we get how war really affects children and also even soldiers too, because
like relationships. I mean, you have the relationship between Masha and the soldier. Mm-hmm. And then you have, like you said, with children as well. Yeah, I mean, it's a wide range. I mean, you see it in both films, right? Belfast and in Ivan's childhood. You see how war affects... I think that's the biggest thing. It's like how war affects people, right?
Right.
Like, children, yes, it's a massive effect on, but you also see that it affects the people that are actually, you know, fighting the wars at the same time. Because at the end of the day, whether you're, you know, 8 years old or, you know, 30 years old or 25 years old or 18 years old, you're still a human being.
Right. Well, I mean, look how war manipulates people today. Even like, you know, some of the Russian soldiers don't even know that they're going to fight. They think they are on a military exercise. Mm-hmm. And they get into the Ukraine and they're like, oh, well, I'm fighting my brothers and sisters and my grandma's holding a gun against me. Well, you know, I'm not, screw this type of thing. So, yeah. And similar thing in Ivan's childhood where, you know, war manipulates the innocent into fighting for a cause they don't believe in, you know, because Ivan really wants to be the whole entire film. He wants to be somewhere else. He has mm-hmm. these very amazingly shot dreams that are beautifully shot. And Tarkovsky really uses cross dissolves and the match frame cuts that he, I it's very Western actually. And he mm-hmm. it reminded me of Orson Welles in a sense. Tarkovsky, yeah. I would say, is more of like the Russian Orson Welles of his day.
And it's a big compliment.
I mean, he really, and he's, you know, revered by a lot of film enthusiasts as, you know, kind of this godfather of world cinema, because he really, with his films, you know, Solaris, Andrei Rublev, as well as Ivan's Childhood, which was one of his first films he really shot, and then Andrei Rublev, and then Solaris, with his films, he was questioning a lot of the political issues that were happening under the Soviet Union's control at the time. Mm-hmm. Filmmakers were oppressed and didn't really they had to kind of abide by certain rules of the state, or they would be, you know, thrown in jail or exiled. Hey, sounds kind of similar to Mohsen Makhmalbaf of what he went through in Iran, you know, yep. which we talked about on that particular episode. You know, Tarkovsky really faced a lot of resistance with the state film authorities wanting to censor his films. Mm-hmm. And because he was very ahead of his time and he was very much influenced by Western films, you see it in particularly in Ivan's Childhood and the way he crafts scenes and he frames his characters in a certain way. That's very Hollywood right now that like we kind of take for granted, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And also his work isn't propaganda either, right?
Because
there was a lot of films coming out at the time during World War II mm-hmm. that were painting the Nazis as not bad people.
Right.
And this is one of those films that kind of like is exploring. It's really, you know, doing something different. And there was this, you know, this set of filmmakers that were doing that during that time, right? But a lot of the films coming out during, you know, World War II and times like that were all about Nazi propaganda. Like, oh, you know, they're great. They're not hurting anybody. And we're mm-hmm. kind of, it's interesting. We're kind of seeing that a little bit even today with the Russia mm-hmm. and Ukraine conflict. There's, you know, now that we have social media and it's so easy to access and you're able to kind of see what people are doing. Like, I know people that are over there right now and they're posting about how, you know, the Russian army is basically creating this propaganda and saying, oh, we're not going to Ukraine to, you know, like take over or anything like that. We're just trying to do this type of mm-hmm. thing. They're trying to push that on the people like, oh, yeah, no. And it's interesting, right? Because like the Nazis were doing that during World War II. They were doing it with film and cinema. And here we are still doing it, you know, in 2022, just in a different.
Well, the Russians have also, I mean, America did their own type of propaganda during the war.
With the Japanese,
and also even against Germany when we got brought into that conflict, because for the longest time, America was like, we're not in the war. And then mm-hmm. Pearl Harbor happens, and we're thrown into the war. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're fighting on both sides. So, you know, we had our own, I mean, Frank Capra was actually one of the many, John Ford, those directors went over to Europe and also the Pacific to shoot war and create propaganda films for America. Like, join the cause, you know, and, you know, fight the good fight and everything. Every country does that during war because they have to get a certain amount of people, you know, riled up.
Well, they need this. They need the support from the nation, right? Like, I mean, when World War II happened, you know, a lot of our, you know, a lot of people became workers in whether they were building machinery or whatever it was, right? Yeah. And it's just kind of how it goes, right? When countries go to war, they have to have people on their side. Otherwise, you know, if you don't have the numbers, good luck.
Yeah, you're
because the other country's going to have the numbers if you don't. It's like you got to match up against them. Nowadays, it's scary because it's a lot more cyber warfare and nuclear warfare, which is, you know, a lot even less scarier. Of tanks and guns. It's a lot more we can hack into your system, take all of your data that contains everything that's important to you and basically cripple you from the inside without even having to fire a bullet.
Exactly.
Which is terrifying to think about.
Well, I mean, war is meant to, the war machine is literally one that will consistently keep on rolling when you have people who are prejudiced, discriminatory, racist. These feelings against your fellow man really create this war atmosphere, and the fact that we put all this money towards the war effort and defending our country and getting involved with other countries' wars, which I'm not saying we shouldn't, because there are sometimes when you should fight dictators and you should fight evil. There is evil in this world that you need to fight against. Hitler was one of them. Right now we're seeing it with Putin. You know, it's like I felt that with Ivan's Childhood, however, like because it was a post-war film, you know, it's 1962, it's the 60s. People were really recovering from the war.
Yeah.
And World War II. And they were also questioning, was it worth it? And was all this death and destruction and how it affected our, you know, governments, our people, and our, how we live actually now in this post, basically a post-war world, how do we live in that? And also what defines us as human and what defines us as a culture or people that can still continue on even though we've seen all this destruction and death in our lives.
Yeah, and that's what I found interesting, you know, about Ivan's Childhood. Of course, it was during World War II. We all know what World War II was fought over.
Yeah.
You know, basically trying to stop a dictator from taking over everything pretty much, honestly, and killing a bunch of innocent people
technically three dictators, Hitler, Mussolini, and Hirohito, so.
True.
But
and then, you know, and then you have in Belfast, you have a disagreement of basically religion.
Yeah, which with Belfast, I found it's more localized.
Yeah.
Rather than a world conflict,
war.
But still war. The fact that it's in your a typical Irish neighborhood, like, or just even like, it could be any neighborhood. It doesn't matter if it's Irish or Protestant or Catholic. It's just like your typical neighborhood. You know, the movie starts out with all these families just kind of playing on the streets. It's a hot summer, August,
normal day,
1969, and they're just having the children are playing in the streets, and then boom, a massive riots breaks out. The freaking almost like the RUC or the basically the equivalent of the National Guard in Ireland's case, you know, come in with tanks and machine guns against their own people.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy because, like, you know, with Belfast, you know, it is Kenneth Branagh's semi-autobiographical film chronicling his life and what influenced him to get into film in the first place. And it's funny how war really actually influences these directors to continue a career in film and to revisit it and also work through it. Because when you've lived through this type of any type of conflict where you're seeing people die your mm-hmm. family uprooted from their normal lives, and you see your parents struggling to make ends meet. You know, the fact that his father, like Buddy's father, has to go over to England to get work, and mm-hmm. he doesn't see him for months on end, while his mom is just literally stuck at home watching the kids and
trying to raise the kids in that you know, crazy scenario they're yeah. in, basically,
and make sure that they don't join any gangs that are
which
trying,
they almost do at almost one point do, in time yeah. and she makes sure that they know not to do that.
She's like the coolest mom, like she no nonsense is. And like the grandparents,
at the very beginning
too.
Of the film, she walks out in the middle of all the Molotovs and stuff and is like, where's Buddy? She goes and finds,
she doesn't
Buddy,
care, just like, she's just like ah.
yeah. And then when they're looting the store, after they come back with the washing powder, she's like, yeah. where did you get this?
She
grabs
has
him
take
and
it
marches
back.
Him back into the store. And people are like, you know, running around, breaking glass. And she's just like, no, you're not going to yeah. do that.
Yeah. Because it's like the protectiveness of being a mother and teaching your children what's right and what's wrong. I love that scene because it surpasses all the shit that is going on around her, and she just yeah. like, I don't give a crap, I'm first and foremost a mom, I'm protecting my kids, and yeah. I need to teach them this lesson because they should not be going down this path.
Well, I think you made an interesting point earlier about, you know, how war kind of influenced his decision to make this film, but also other artists as well. I feel like when we have traumatic experiences as people, right, mm-hmm. we're always I'm sure you're the same way, but you can always remember the traumatic experiences more in your life than like those happy moments. Like those are like ingrained into your brain. Like if you see something traumatic happen, you're going to remember that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But like, say there's like a happy experience, you just remember bits and pieces, but you can almost recall every single detail of something the traumatic, because it just like shocks us to our core.
Right.
And I feel like that's war especially, right? Like is a perfect proponent to create and make things off of, because I feel like we as artists, like you said, we want to express ourselves, and the way we do that, whether it's painting, whether it's film, whether it's, you know, whatever medium you decide to use, a lot mm-hmm. of those traumatic experiences come out because I believe also it's therapy for us as human beings, because we're able to not only put that out there for other people to see, but at the same time, we're also able to kind of use that as a way for us to kind of, you know, come to terms with it in a way, if it makes sense to you.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it is therapy. It literally is. Like, art is the best therapy, really, you mm-hmm. know, and any form of art, painting, drawing, creating music, making films, writing, directing, producing, you know, it's a creative art. And I really think Branagh just really, you know, he really, with this film, it's a passion project of his. It feels mm-hmm. like that, and he takes tender care to portray his characters with love and affection, and really, it's also a beautiful homage to his country, you know, where he comes from, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know, it's almost like I read a review where they said like he kind of puts the war into the background, and
yep. I was
it's
gonna say that.
There, but what's really important, it's really from the child's point of view, because how does a child really function during war? I mean, you see what happens with Ivan. He's literally creating scenarios and he's dreaming of a better place and being
yeah,
back
scarred.
With his family.
He's basically
and
emotionally, he's yeah. emotionally scarred from
he has PTSD.
Yeah. And that's something I mentioned to you before we started rolling about Belfast, was that, you know, it's actually a really feel good film when you kind of forget about the war stuff that's going on, because in reality, you know, if there is war, it's not always, unless you're like right in the conflict, right? But otherwise, if you're not in the conflict, you really don't think about it as much until the conflict comes to you. And we kind of see that. We kind of see a balance of, you know, when they decide to kind of stir things up occasionally or whatever. But a lot of the film is just really exploring that family dynamic and seeing how people live through times of, you know, tragedy and turmoil and just unrest in a country or whatever, wherever it may be. And I love that we get to explore. It's two very different things, right? Like with Ivan, we're kind of getting an extreme with World War II, right? Like, I mean, World War II was absolutely an absolutely horrendous war that was fought, and so many terrible things, and many people perished.
Millions of people died.
Millions of people died for no reason, mostly. Not really. In reality, well, it was.
And the innocent are the children of, you know, both on both sides, Russian and German. You know, I love that Tarkovsky didn't, you know, just target the Germans and say they're, it's almost like the Germans are really not there, and it's just the Russians trying to, like, you know, they're talking amongst themselves, like, we're going to go do this mission, and they're there, but they're not there. And it's like the unseen enemy. And that fear seeps into the soldiers, and especially Ivan as well. And we get basically the aftermath of what is, how that affects the characters. And I love that it's in black and white. Well, actually both films are in black and white.
Yep.
And I actually kind of, I had a question on to you. Why do you think these were shot in black and white? What were your thoughts on that?
I have a great answer, actually, because I was going to cover that in a bit. So look at that. You read my mind.
Good segue right there.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to point out. So I feel like war in general is not, I mean, I feel like whenever you see war footage, it's always black and white, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like for me, like, war to me is something that's like, it's not, I don't know, I guess maybe because it's bleak and it's not a fun time, and there's not really any positives that come out of it. Maybe that's why they decided to go with the black and white. I do find it interesting in Belfast that everything that has to do with art and the very beginning of the film is in color, because it's almost like they're past that point, because it's, you know, they're showing Belfast in current time. But also throughout the film, whenever Buddy goes with his grandma or whatever, they go to like the cinema or they go to see the plays, they're all in color. And it's because, you know, art is breathing life. It's kind of, you know, it's helping, although there's so much stuff going around, like, all, you know, with what's going on in their area they live in, that's giving them like that escape. It's giving them that feeling of freedom and just, and I think, like you were saying, you know, that's why he decided to do those segments in color, because he, as an artist, he realizes, you know, how much art influenced him and what it meant to him in those such bleak and dark times of war. Yeah. Because I feel like when you describe war, like when you think about war off the top of your head, like dark, bleak, disaster, killing, I mean, there's no positive words that you associate with war, right?
Well, and you also have the contrast of light and dark. Lightness and darkness. The evil.
Yeah, the dark and light, the good and the bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I see what you did there. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I feel like more so for Belfast, I think it was black and white because he wanted to show those differences between, like, you know, how he felt when he was around the arts and around the ability to kind of escape from that. Mm-hmm. And then with Ivan's childhood, I feel like it was more so just kind of, I mean, a lot of the war footage from, I mean, well, all the war footage from World War II is, you know, not in color.
Yeah. So until they, like, recolorized it on the History
Until they
Channel.
Recolorized it, yeah.
And it looks, But, you know.
I was just going to say, I feel like it does a better job of conveying war in that film. Like, you know, let's say take 1917, different film, for example. It's all in color. Uh-huh. But it's like, would that have the same effect? Would it be more effective black and white? Would it be more effective in color? Because there's a lot of color in that film, right?
It also depends on the internal, like, 1917 was almost like, here's a set of events that happens in one long take. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, for me, like, I didn't feel like we were going into the depths of these characters and really, like, get an internalized emotional moment. It was almost like we're along for this journey of war and along for the ride, in a sense.
And the camera work.
I mean, the camera was gorgeous.
It was absolutely. I mean, the way they shot it, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and then you take a film like Saving Private Ryan, where the first, like the beach scene at the very beginning of the film, when he's remembering, goes complete. Like his memory is in. The film stock goes really grainy, and gets grittier, and it has an opaque sepia tone to it. So. Whereas, like, the very beginning of the film, you know, like, when Saving, you know, Private Ryan is, like, remembering, he's at the, I believe it's, yeah, the funeral ground, and he's remembering, like, the events and everything, it's a little less contrasty and gritty. So, the, in a sense, they use color in to convey memory, whereas I think Ivan's childhood was more of a internal world that Ivan, a child's world that is only seen through black and white in this particular instance, because he's been scarred, he's been taken advantage of, he's been really thrust from his home and into, he's also, what I found interesting was that he has to grow up very fast. He acts like he's been a soldier all his life. Like he he talks to the other soldiers like they're his chums, and that, you know, that camaraderie happens with soldiers, you know, that he has and everything. And it's, he's like a man in a small boy's body, in a sense.
Yeah. And I mean, he has to be with his situation and where he's at, he had to grow up fast. He had no choice.
Grow a thick skin, yeah. And the fact that Belfast is kind of like the start of Buddy trying to grow that thick skin to protect himself from what's happening around him. You know, I think Buddy's more in a more vulnerable spot because he is a little more, well, he's definitely younger, or
I think he's a little younger.
Yeah, he's a little younger, slightly.
I think he's a little younger.
But it's like he hasn't seen the horrors that Ivan has, you know, it's, and hasn't been asked to kill. You know, I love the scene in Ivan's childhood when he, when the soldiers go out and they leave Ivan behind, and he's like practicing on setting traps, and then it cuts to like him with a knife, you know, almost like a very cat-like creature, you know, stalking his prey. And then it switches to a hallucination that he starts having of, he sees writing on the wall of like, we're about to be shot, avenge us from who knows, like the last people who were there before they were killed by the Nazis, which I took to also be like him remembering his family's deaths as well.
Yeah.
Because we see scenes of his family, of like his mom and I think his sister, I believe, or like one of this girl he knew when he was younger and such. And he's always chasing her too in his dreams. He's always chasing either his mother or this young girl that is very angelic. Kind of is, reminds me of a like slightly younger version of the character of Masha in a sense. But and it's interesting that the song that is played on the record player is singing about Masha, and she's like, it's almost like you don't know if they're all kind of dead or they're all kind of like just, you know, at like kind of the interim between heaven and earth, and this is like their ascendancy into heaven, or them having to work through what they experienced here on this planet, you know.
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point in regards to talking about how Ivan's basically had to grow up and he's alone. The difference between Ivan and Buddy is Buddy still has his family. He's still got, you know, his full family there. His mom, his dad, his grandma, his grandpa. Well, no spoilers. But you know, he doesn't, although he's going through this, you know, what people shouldn't be going through at that age, or what kids shouldn't be, what anybody shouldn't be going through in general, he still has that emotional support to allow him to, you know, not have to grow up and take that on. And also the setting is just very different, right? It's just a very different setting overall. I mean, here you have Belfast and here you have, you know, the trenches
of war.
Yeah. I mean, it's two very, it's one is a very extreme, you know, on the war side. And one is, I mean, not, you know, there's definitely tension, but it doesn't erupt as often. Like, you know, it's not bombs going off 24/7 or gunshots or things like that. They're still living their life. I mean, he falls for that Catholic girl.
Yeah.
Who I can't remember her name right now. But one of my favorite scenes is actually the one of the last scenes of the film where he goes up to, and gives her the flowers and she gives him the flowers back. And then he runs back over to his dad and he's like, Dad, or Pa, he calls him Pa, of course.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, do you think I could, you know, I could, you know, date her one day? And his dad's like, oh, you know, I don't know why I'm trying to do an accent. He's like, oh, you know, it's very possible. But then he's like, Dad, but she's a Catholic. And then he like gets down and he basically tells him, he's like, it doesn't matter like if she's Catholic, she's Muslim, Hindu, Christian, whatever she is. If she's like has a good heart and she's a good person, she's welcome in our house anytime.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a huge, huge thing, because we as people are very quick to judge people based on whether it's religion, their race, political views, race, whatever it may be. And that line right there is like so powerful, because you think about the amount of people that you meet in, let's say, a day. I mean, I guarantee they probably have different political views than you, different religious views than you, different views about, you know, whatever it may be. And we might be quick to write them off, but in reality, it's like, no, find out more about them. Like, sit down and have a discussion, because they might be really great people underneath.
Right. And they're still our brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
You know, we're all related.
We as a society are so fast to judge people these days. And as an artist, you know, I feel like artists are the people that are not as much judgmental, because artists normally are quite weird and out there already anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just how we are. But that line really stuck with me, because I was like, yeah, that's so true though, because you don't know. I mean, just because that person might look a little bit different than you or think a little bit different than you doesn't mean they're like a bad person in general, right?
They'd
still be an amazing human being. And we're so quick to put that barrier up because our comfortability is like, I don't want to interact with that. Like, that's
well,
not
that would take
my
work
vibe.
And
yeah.
And
which we don't like to do.
And effort, you know. So the fact that there is, you know, you have lazy people sometimes, you know. And it's like, you know, you should get to know people and get to know their backgrounds and everything and try to find common ground. You know, that's why we're here, to live and breathe together. And the fact that, like, I love that Belfast shows how, you know, even two religions, Protestant and Catholic, even though they all worship the same God, they still fight amongst each other. I mean, you see it in Islamic culture. You see it in Jewish culture. You see it in any form of Christian culture, too. It's like you have these factions that, oh, if you're not this, then if you don't believe in my beliefs, you know, we're going to go to war with you.
Yeah.
We don't like you. And it's like, I thought Jesus was supposed to love everyone, you know? So,
that's exactly right. What I love about that final line, because I'm pretty sure it's the final line before they leave.
Yeah.
Is that final line literally encapsulates that whole film. Like that whole conflict is about that. And he basically lays it out that
he shatters the wall.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like they're fighting over something that's so dumb. In reality, when they could just, you know, sit down and talk to the people, they'd realize, wait a minute, we're not that much different than what we think we are.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It's just crazy that one little line that he's telling to, I don't even remember how old Buddy is, but he's like 9, 20, 11, something like that.
Yeah. I think it's like younger. Almost like a year after the start, because it starts in August 1969. And then I think it's either several months pass or like a year passes or something. And then they finally get out, or are able to leave Ireland and go to England.
And it literally, that line right there is what the conflict was about. And he sums it up and solves it instantly right there. But it's like, it's almost like you have to talk to people. And this is interesting. It's almost like you have to talk to people like children sometimes.
Right.
Because in that sense, he's literally talking to his son, who is a child. But some people you have to break it down like that for, because it's
a lot of the time kids do not see color, or they do not see that discriminatory or that wall that divides us. They don't get that until they're older, or they've been taught that. That's the thing. And I think that's what also Branagh's telling is that you have to teach your kids love and affection and to love thy neighbor, then, you know, no, go out and kill them because they don't think the same way as you do. Mm-hmm. No, to be a good person, you know, you have to teach your children the right things to do and how to treat people. You know, thankfully you and I have both gotten those morals from good set of parents, you know?
Yeah, so, shout out to the parents.
Yeah, ooh. but if you don't have that groundwork and you don't have that sense of family around you, I mean, look at Ivan. He's literally just told to kill. Doesn't matter who. Just, he has to kill. And he doesn't know what to do with that, especially at such a young age, because it's like, why am I here? Literally, that's why
he's like, I shouldn't be here.
And he doesn't find peace until he dies. Spoiler alert, but, you know, he doesn't find peace until he leaves this earth and is able to be, you know, reunited with his family.
Yeah.
But it's, I find it interesting that these two films, one has a very more optimistic viewpoint of like the world, and then the other has more of a bleak sense of what could happen, you know, what has happened to a lot of children during the World War II and such, and them having to survive war. I mean, we're still having children try to survive and survive relocating and uplifting their lives and moving to different countries to escape war and conflict around them. You know, it's still an ongoing struggle that is happening in the world today. So the fact that Tarkovsky was already bringing this up in the 60s and is, you know,
happening currently.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is literally still happening right now. People are being displaced and having to relocate.
Exactly.
At this very moment we're recording this podcast.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's crazy. So the fact that these films are shedding light on all this stuff, it's just an ongoing struggle for people in the world, unfortunately, you know? So
The one thing I wanted you, because you were mentioning about like having the mentality of having to leave home or whatever. I kind of wrote this as a note too. You know, it's like we as humans, wherever we grow up, that is home. Like it's not just your physical home. It's the space around you, right? It's your community. It's all that. And when we're forced, either we're forced to leave or we make a choice to leave. It's always such a, I found the film also dealing with that too, like with Buddy, right? Not only is he going through war, but he also has to deal with the fact that, you know, he's got to leave, right? Like he's got to leave his friends. He's got to leave the girl he's interested, even though he's young, right? Still, like we all had young love when we were kids. Like we all had a girl or a guy we had a crush on. Like that's just how it is, right?
Yeah.
That's just human beings. But he's got to leave his friends. He's got to leave his school, leave his like home, his grandparents. I mean.
Yeah. And the grandparents. That's the thing. It also shows like the multi-generational ideals and thought process of each generation, because you have his grandparents who they're going to live there. They're going to die there.
Yeah.
His parents are a little more optimistic where they're, no, we have to provide for our next family, you know, to get out of this country, you know? And then the kids are just like, well, we're just along for the ride. And hope we can still be together. That's all they want, is they want that family unit to stay together. I mean, Buddy even wants his grandparents to come along, but they won't. And I, that kills anyone, you know, like when you have to leave family behind.
Yeah.
And
but it speaks
go
it
to another country.
Yeah, but it speaks truth too, though, because like with the grandparents, you know, they've been rooted there. Like mm-hmm. they've lived there their whole lives. And in reality, as sad as it is,
yeah,
typically grandparents are at the closer to the end of their life. Like that's just the reality of the situation, right? So, you know, when she decides to stay, you kind of realize it kind of gives you that idea that look at life too, right? Like you said, like, you know, they've been there forever, they're rooted there. They're going to stay there because ultimately they don't probably have that much longer in general.
Right.
And then you have Buddy, then you have Pa and Ma, Buddy's parents. They're like, well, you know, we can move and we want to move because we have our kids that we want to provide for and we want them to have a good life. Like, yes, they've grown up here, but they're still not fully grown. They're not in college. They're not in high school. Like,
no.
They're still young. Although they have connections here, we want them to have a better life overall. And that's a thing that the movie balances with. Because I remember the first time in the film when they talked to Buddy about potentially leaving Belfast,
and he
just goes
out.
Berserk. Yeah. He goes berserk.
Yeah.
But they both know that they have to do that eventually. Yeah. Like they know they put it off, but in the back of their mind, they know that they have to leave at some point because it's just not healthy and safe.
And it gets to the point where they have to leave because they're having death threats against them. Their lives, their children's lives especially, are on the line. You know,
yep.
The fact that, you know,
when Billy grabs them and basically takes them hostage pretty much.
Yeah.
Billy,
I think it's Billy, yeah. And it's the bully from the dad's childhood that he grew up with and then turns against him basically because he wants to cleanse the town of all Catholics. And it's just like, dude,
sounds like a dictator that I've heard of before
that we've talked about history. Yes.
Yeah.
So and the fact that it's, you know, they're literally doing guerrilla street warfare on the, and it's interesting because like Belfast represented kind of the start of this conflict because mm-hmm. it continued on for 32 more years in Ireland. And it was known as the Troubles. And, you know, it's crazy that Ireland went through this conflict, you know, and it happens everywhere in the world, too. We see it in, you know, South America. We see it in parts of Africa. We see it in parts of Russia. I mean, we're seeing it in Russia and Ukraine right now. We see it in what was a few years ago was, I think, was it Albania and Serbia or Bosnia? It was like that region was also having, we had a bunch of, I think, Serbian refugees coming out because they were, you know, again, it was inner fighting between religions and political groups that were just like in conflict with each other. So it's happening all around the world. And it's the fact that it's displacing so many people is really sad because it just, you know, it's heart-wrenching to see people suffer and mm-hmm. have to go through this, especially young children, because it ages them in a way that they then may grow up to really see the world in a totally different light than if they were to be given an idyllic childhood where they're raised in peace and prosperity.
Yeah, no child should have to go through any type of war or conflict. It's just, I mean, like I said, seeing the videos right now, because we have such an ability to, I feel like we as the American people, especially right now, because we're not over there and we're seeing it, we're so desensitized to everything. I feel like we're desensitized to war in general, though. I feel like society, a lot of society is desensitized to war because we've seen it so much. Even back with, you know, Iraq and Iran and all that type of stuff and ISIS and all those type of things, it goes on. We know it goes on. But until it truly hits you, you're not, I feel like you don't truly understand or get the impacts. Like I could pull up my phone right now, and especially TikTok is one of the biggest places, but you could just scroll through and see like videos of helicopters being shot down and tanks blowing up. And it's like, it's so weird to almost not feel anything in a way. You know what I mean? Like, here it is. Yeah. Like, we're seeing real, you know, real warfare on an application, but most people are just, you know, commenting and putting a like on it and just scrolling to the next thing. And that's wild. That's so wild to think that we do that.
Yeah.
It's almost like the reality of the situation.
Yeah. It's like they totally ignore that we're, you know, people are dying over there. And
yeah,
it's
more just media. It's more media to consume for us. Like, we just look at it as like, mm-hmm. oh man, did you see this?
Yeah.
But then we don't think about the repercussions and what's going on, you know, what happened from that bomb that blew up or whatever, right? It's just like, you see the, oh my goodness, the bomb blew up. But it's so crazy to me that we live in a world now, and these films really, you know, speak to it. Of course, you know, they're meant to be placed, well, one was, you know, in the 60s. Both take place in World War II, of course, and then one is in 1960.
Yeah. Belfast is 69, yeah.
Where war was on the grand scale. But even still, like, can you imagine, just for a second, if we would have had this type of social media during World War II and stuff? Like,
yeah. Well, they were even talking about the fact that we now have commercialized satellites that can literally view anything and ground troop movements of troops, equipment, airplanes, vehicles, anything. Commercial satellites, now people can, like, any particular party can just view. It's basically public domain at this point. And they're saying this is changing warfare and how we strategize with warfare, mm-hmm. because the fact that we can literally see our enemies at any point and know what their movements are is pretty crazy. Yeah. You know, the fact that they didn't have this technology really back in World War II, I think if they had this in World War II, it would have swayed it would be, I mean, we're in a era of the information wars. Information is key. And
that's why communication, I said cyber warfare earlier.
It's basically cyber communication warfare, because those who have the power will use communication and devices and also cyber warfare to get what they need, and also manipulate how people think, how people view certain conflicts and stuff, you know?
Well, yeah. Just imagine if the internet went down in America.
Yeah.
Imagine just that simple thing alone. People would go into a frenzy.
I've had internet go out for like a few minutes.
I had to go out a day, and I was like, what do I do with my life?
I'm like, okay, well, I feel so disconnected. Like, what am I supposed to do? I can't call. Yeah. Or like, I can't, I mean, I could call, but yeah, like,
it's crazy to think about that, right? I mean, we live in a world where warfare now is just, there's so much more power behind it. Like, the fact that you can literally cripple a country by getting into their information through whatever methods you use is, it's wild. We go from World War II with, you know, Ivan's childhood, where we have bombs, mortars, planes, mm-hmm. guns, I mean, everything. Then we go into our religious war, the trouble.
Belfast.
Thank you. I had a little blank there for a second.
And now we're talking about.
You know, that one film. And now here we are in 2022 with the Russian-Ukraine conflict. That's every day there's new things going on. And it's interesting. This is what's really interesting. This is the thing, because we're on the topic because we're talking about these two films. So it's perfect. But when this first kicked off, when the Russian-Ukraine conflict first kicked off, the internet was buzzing about it. I feel like everybody was covering it. Everybody was
We knew it was coming.
Yeah, everybody. But now, as it's gone on, which is crazy to me, and I mean, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like it's now like old news, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's war going on. Oh, across.
Well,
across
you saw it pushed COVID
It pushed COVID hasn't been talked about. Like, COVID hasn't been talked about since the war started.
It never happened.
You know, COVID doesn't exist anymore. It's crazy.
According to the news. So, because literally the news is so fast now that they jump from story to story so fast, things get lost. And I think then disinformation starts happening, and also the mm-hmm. fact that we're not focusing on certain things that we should be focusing on. Yeah. You know, because like the Ukraine-Russian conflict, yes, it's bad, but there's also other conflicts happening in the world, especially all around the world, you know, and those also deserve our attention as well. You know, it's not just like, oh, okay, because it's, I mean, I get Russia, yes, Ukraine, we need to have some kind of like help and aid sent to them and everything, but it's also like it's happening elsewhere as well. And it will continue to happen until you stop certain dictators from being allowed to do this. The fact that we're just allowing this to happen right now is, I mean, I get why we're doing it, because we don't want to be thrust into another world war.
Yeah, no, that's,
but
I think every
there's
country's
a point
trying
where
to avoid
how,
that.
How the question then becomes, how far do you wait and how many people do you let die before you're forced into a conflict?
I feel like that's the sad part of the whole thing is, right, like human life in this situation is not looked at as human life. It's more just, someone's dead. Like,
yeah,
it's literally at that. I feel like at that when war starts, it's just numbers at that point. Right.
Yes. Like, to the government.
It's just numbers
to the government.
Yeah.
Yes.
To the government. Yeah. To the governments. It really is. It's just numbers. It's just like, oh, you know, 50 people died in that explosion. It's crazy. I mean, we're not off topic because it really fits with what we talked about today in these two films, but
because it comes back to the artist being the voice in this case to show the conflict and its horrors and its aftermath of and what it does to our youth, to our people, to our
country, to our countries.
You know,
yeah,
it affects everyone. And World War II proved that. World War I even proved that, too. It changed Europe. Both those wars changed the face of territories, political governments, how people view each other, changed it for what we're now revisiting these conflicts again all these years later. You know, and I think we will continue to do this until certain things are put in place before, like, we can stop these types of regimes from just invading countries just to, you know, get to a seaport and other things.
I mean, yeah, power.
Yes. So
the
and
big
I,
P.
And I think, yeah, and if anything, these two films, Belfast and Ivan's Childhood, really prove and show how power corrupts the most innocent, or how it affects
how the most innocent are affected
by it. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Because, you know, I was a kid, you were a kid at one point, you know, thank goodness we never had to go through anything like this. I can't fathom being a kid and being in the middle of a conflict that's going on. I can't fathom it. I mean, it's truly, I feel like it's something truly we will never be able to truly understand unless we're ever put in that position. But even still then, we're adults now. So it's a different world. Like, as a kid, I can't fathom it. But these two films, I feel like, really encapsulate and capture the roughness of war and how a child views it as well. Like, really well.
Yeah. Good way to end the episode.
If you like this episode, make sure to follow us on social media at Film Detectives for further news and upcoming shows. Join us next week as we explore filmmakers from around the world.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track. We care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.